see you there. Welcome to Stealing Focus Lane.
Oh, blimey, God.
Hello, Stealing Focus.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I'm Emily. This is Jeff.
Hey, guys.
And this is Janelle.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about
Mary Poppins Returns.
So there's a lot of hype around this movie. It's a big deal. It's a beloved classic for decades and decades and decades. And they decided to make a sequel.
Terrible idea in such a good movie.
Oh.
It should not have turned out as good as it did.
Yeah.
And I've already warned Emily I'm going to be useless today because I'm just going to sit here and tell you how much I loved it over and over
again. I was thinking the same thing.
We loved it.
It was so good. It was really, really
good. You know, we were ready.
We were ready
to be up on our high horses and to just, you know, grumble. But I think it's a worthy successor. You know, it has the DNA of the original, but it's definitely a new story.
Yeah.
There's parallels to be made, and we'll talk about that.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there was just wonderful performances, just a great script. I was very impressed. It was, as you mentioned, it was one of the films that you cannot mess up. If you mess it up,
It would have been bad.
I don't know what would happen. Maybe the earth would explode or something, but they didn't. Rob Marshall killed it.
I was skeptical and for like the first 20 minutes, because actually I went back and watched the original Mary Poppins, and the first 20 minutes this is a little slow too.
It's a slow burn. Yeah.
So I'm like sitting there and I'm like, you know, it's not bad. Okay, it's kind of charming. And then the moment she appears, floating down with her umbrella.
Yeah.
Oh, and from that moment on, this was me.
Okay, so, I was skeptical too, because in her first scene with the Banks adults, formerly children, they do...
As most adults are.
They drop in a lot of references to the original, and I was kind of like, oh, is this what the whole movie's gonna be like? But I feel like they had to get it out of the way in that first scene, so that you're not hung up the whole movie. So, like, she says, like, Michael, don't be a codfish. Oh... Jane inclined to giggle.
Yeah.
She sees her reflection in the reflection. She rides up the band. You know, it's all this stuff she does, like, kind
so
of.
It was so cool
how
that just kind of happened in the background of that shot.
Yeah.
By the way, that all went completely over my head. I didn't even realize it was callbacks to
the original. Oh, yeah. They're all callbacks to the original.
And Ben Whishaw, is it? Whishaw?
Oh, so lovely. Yeah.
He plays Michael.
Emily Mortimer, both great.
I love Emily Mortimer.
Yeah,
and
both
something
fantastic.
I loved about this was the sort of the Dick Van Dyke character is Manuel Miranda in this movie.
Yep.
And he's not playing Bert. He's playing like a protege.
Bert's protege.
Yeah. And I love that his love interest isn't Mary Poppins, because that's an impossible love.
Yeah.
But it's Jane.
It's Jane.
Yeah, which is adorable.
And can we talk about how this is Lin-Manuel Miranda's first film?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It feels crazy because he's been in the zeitgeist for so long. But
in the theaters, I guess, but you know, the nation at large and internationally, maybe most people don't know.
I mean,
but
the thing is, like, he got this because he's so well known in the theater community, because Hamilton, obviously, you know, so many things. Also, he did the soundtrack to Moana, you know, so he's definitely been involved with films before, but he's not involved in the music at all, except as a performer in this film. And
so lovely and charming and adorable.
He's perfect. He's got a little twinkle in his eye and he's not rolling his eyes at it or winking like, look at how silly this is. He's just 100% earnest.
Yep.
And you have to be.
You have to be. Yeah.
Well, and it's kind of cool to see, you know, something, a film of this magnitude, you have to nail about 15 things. Just nail, get them perfectly. And he was one of those things. He was the perfect actor, role, person to play this role, perfect timing, just the exact right, like you said, twinkle in his eye, the feel for what the story was, he lived in that world, he's perfectly believable and awesome.
It's hard to be nice and earnest and not corny. It's something that, like, this is a strange comparison, but it's what makes Chris Evans such a good Captain America.
Yeah.
Because it'd be so easy to be like...
that earnest quality, you either, you know, you have it or you don't. And I guess that leads us to, you know, the title character, Mary Poppins.
Oh.
Emily Blunt is...
No one else could play this part.
Nobody. I can't think of a single other movie star who's around. Because it's going to... You have to have a movie star. We're not going to have some unknown playing it.
Right.
This isn't...
Introducing.
Yeah, even though Julie Andrews was you know, a newbie when she did.
I think that's the only way to go is either have a total newbie or
but
the original, there was a different time when, obviously, when Mary Poppins came out, it was what, 64?
Something like that.
So, like, yeah, these days for a major Hollywood blockbuster film, you have to have a...
And for something like this, Lin-Manuel was almost the chance they took.
Yeah, he's the ingenue.
Yeah, but Emily Blunt is amazing. You know, they don't try to make her Julie Andrews. She doesn't try to be. She's her own interpretation. They write these songs in her range, and she sounds great. And this is her... What, second or third collaboration with Rob Marshall?
Second. She did Into the Woods, and he wanted her for 9.
Right.
She said she didn't go in for 9 because she thought it was dancey.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we have to say that we actually went to a Q&A. So we got to see and meet Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda and Rob Marshall.
No big deal.
Well, yeah, this was an we got to see an advanced screening on the Fox lot, which was a thrill. Even the garage that we parked in had Julie
Andrews on it. Sound of Music, Julie Andrews, but still. Yeah,
it was perfect.
Yeah, so we got to get, you know, we got some really great insights.
Well, and Emily talked to Emily Blunt afterwards and told her that she needs to do more musicals, and she said, "Yeah,
She does.
It was a very good accent,
and I got in trouble for saying, and I might get in trouble for saying this again, I think Emily Blunt actually is a better Mary Poppins than Julie Andrews.
Oh, you are in so much trouble.
I just think she nails that.
She has an edge to her.
Yes. Yes, she's stern but playful. She's more the Mary Poppins I picture from the books, where, frankly, in the book, she's kind of a bitch.
You know, yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah. Now that I'm thinking about it, I agree with you.
Yeah.
It's just that Julie Andrews has always been Mary Poppins.
Yeah, no, Julie Andrews is amazing and perfect.
But if you think of what P.L. Travers intended by the book, in the books, I do agree that
she's still nicer.
Has a little bit more edge.
Yeah. She's still nicer than the version in the books. The version in the books is like a total gaslighter. There's actually a little of that in the movie where the kids are saying, like, we did this. And
she's like,
I don't know what you mean.
What nonsense. Yeah.
But what can she say?
She does that in the original a little bit too, though. She definitely does. But yeah, Emily Blunt is phenomenal.
Perfect.
There's no one else. Rob Marshall said it too. Like, there's no one else who could have done it. And I tend to agree. Mm-hmm. And
Something that I thought initially, 2 years ago when we heard about this casting, or maybe almost 2 years ago.
It rang true
throughout, and throughout the entire movie, her command of the character, the things that she made fresh, the things that, like, she could be stern about, but also the things that there was just joy underneath.
Yes.
Yeah.
What an amazing performance.
I literally would love to hear suggestions for who else could have played this part, because I can't think of anyone.
You know who else couldn't? Rob Marshall was telling us he couldn't think of anyone else either, so...
She's amazing, and I love where she's singing in this. It's written, you know, it's written to her strengths. She's doing a lot more belting, a lot more mezzo-soprano-y stuff. They're not trying to have her in the rafters or anything. And, you know, she's really fantastic. And that leads me to the score, because I don't think... I didn't think it would be possible for a modern musical score to be written that sounds like this. Because this does sound A, like the Sherman Brothers, and B, like from the golden age of musicals. It really does. It has all these elements to it that you don't really see in musical theater anymore.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry, Jeff has to return a text.
Sorry. Anyway, you see all these things that you don't see in modern musicals anymore. Mm. Like, for example, in the covers, not the book, they do a lot of, like, let me tell you a story about a family member of mine, and then my family member taught me a lesson.
That is so
Irving Berlin or Cole Porter.
It's a little Harold Hill.
Yeah.
I know that's not the name of the composer.
No, the pattern, so they can't have Lin-Manuel Miranda do rap, because that wouldn't be in the context of the story. So the closest they get is they give him this patter sequence, which is fantastic. Mm, and he's just going really, really super fast and very, you know, it was very like Sondheim-y. Mm. And the score was written by Mark Shaman.
Yeah. Genius.
And hopefully he has a brother so we can say the Shaman brothers.
No, it's Shaman and Whitman. So the score was written by Mark Shaman and Scott Whitman. And Mark Shaman has a very extensive catalog of things he's written for. His biggest Broadway musical was Hairspray, by far.
Yeah.
But he's also written the soundtracks to a lot of movies, like just looking like on Wikipedia, Adam's Family and Adam's Family Values, which means he wrote the Happy Turkey Day song, which
classic,
genius.
Ooh, City Slickers.
Beaches, When Harry Met Sally, Sister Act, come on. South Park.
He did the songs for South Park too, which are very musical theater style.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's kind of what this felt like. Like, the songs really do feel like they're from the universe of Mary Poppins. And if you know anything about the Sherman Brothers, you know, they wrote...
Didn't they hate each other?
Oh, yeah, they hated each other. There's this amazing documentary called The Boys. If you can watch it, watch it. It's really good. It's all about their...
It was produced by their sons who never even knew each other. They were cousins, and they never they never hung out in their lives.
But they, for whatever reason, they were able to channel that into, like, some of the best songs ever. Like, one of the things they were, like, brilliant at was, like, coming up with, like, nonsense words. Like, supercalifragilistic, you know. And et cetera, dot, 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 dot. So I think that Shaman and Whitman do a fantastic job of channeling that. The score, not just the songs itself, but the scoring is
beautiful. Everything is beautiful. The costumes, the music.
And the scoring is super effective when they integrate themes from the original film. Like, there's a part, like, in the third act where Michael's, like, kind of feeling down and he's talking to Mary Poppins and saying he's at his low point, and then you just hear the theme of Papa Banks from the original The Life I Lead. It's like da 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 da.
And that's the perfect use of scoring.
And then you're just like, oh god, he's become his dad. Like, it's so effective.
Yeah, and the brilliance of music in general is to be able to evoke emotion without using words.
Yeah.
And that's where scoring is just perfect, when you can just put in a melody line, just push it in there, and everyone feels it. Yeah. You might not even realize.
No, you might not even know why because these things are flying past me unconsciously.
But yeah, I
the, what other cast people?
Well, the look of the... Well, I wanted to talk a little about the look of the film.
Yeah, those
artistic
costumes.
Design. So the production designer, Emily, actually sat next to this guy.
Oh, that's right.
In the theater.
we didn't know
we didn't know who he was, but we knew he was somebody because the seat was saved.
Yeah.
And it's John Meyer. Who's done a number of other films. Did Chicago, he did Memoirs of a Geisha, Dream Girls. He did Nine, so he's worked with
Rob Marshall. Rob Marshall a lot.
You know, and that happens a lot. But their collaboration on this was brilliant. Because of kind of what you said, the film had to live in the same universe as the original.
Yeah.
We haven't been back there since the early 60s, and you can't get it wrong.
He created a world in a bowl, and that was beautiful.
And the costumes in the bowl, because they're painted.
Yeah,
on.
The costumes overall are amazing.
The costumes by Sandy Powell are amazing. There's a scene when they go into the bowl where it's these really nice dresses, but they're painted.
Yeah,
on.
They look like they're part of the bowl, and they have the same perspectives as the bowl. It's incredible. Yeah. And the costumes overall, like, even when they're just in the normal world, they're amazing. Mary Poppins' look is fantastic.
Amazing.
The red gloves and her hat.
Again, I have nothing to contribute except I love this movie so much.
Yeah, we love it.
So
there's a lot of great supporting roles. Meryl Streep basically fills the Edwin role. She's basically Uncle Albert. She's Cousin Topsy. So, you know, another, like, random relative that we go to.
I'm going to commit heresy twice, because I already said that I liked Emily Blunt more than Julie Andrews.
Yeah.
Didn't love Meryl Streep.
I mean, she was kind of just... there. It could have been played by anyone, but, you know, Rob Marshall, you know, if you can get Meryl Streep, why not get Meryl Streep?
I want to see it again because the songs went by so quickly for me, I don't think I had time to really digest them.
Yeah.
And maybe I will like that number more.
Yeah, maybe. And then we also had Colin Firth as, like, kind of the antagonist. And what I liked, which they did not do in the original, because there really wasn't a... there wasn't, like, a villain in the original Mary Poppins. There is a villain in this, I would say.
Yep.
Or an antagonist, anyway. And anyway, he is represented as a wolf when they're inside the bowl. And he's Colin Firth's voice. And so it's some foreshadowing. So it's a really neat connection, you know, to tie to something that's happening in the real world.
Yeah, and I just want to say, like, I'd never seen anything like that going into the bowl.
Yeah.
Either just conceptually in any film that I've ever seen, I just never thought of that before, but it was such an inventive thing and so well done. And one of the questions that we had that was answered in the talkback was it was all hand-drawn animation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was...
I was so worried it was going to be computer animation made to look like hand-drawn, but Rob Marshall confirmed it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Hand-drawn, and it shows it looks like the animation from the original Mary Poppins from that 60s era of Disney films, that kind of sketchy, like, you can kind of see the lines.
Yeah.
And the idea of them riding around on the bowl was just crazy. Amazing. It was really inventive. Yeah, totally. I agree. I can't say I've seen that.
Can you tell me, since you've probably seen it more recently, I don't know if there were any actors of color in the original Mary Poppins.
Oh, no.
And it is so refreshing to see one of Colin Firth's henchmen.
Yeah.
Also Lin-Manuel Miranda, obviously.
Oh, yeah. They made way more of an effort. Oh. Even, like, all the...
They made an effort.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, even, like, the Learys, you know, the lamplighters. Right. There were a bunch of people of color in the group there.
Yeah.
We got some cameos. You get an Angela Lansbury and a Dick Van Dyke.
Oh,
which, like,
so lovely.
Yeah. And you can get them, why not?
You can barely understand what Dick Van Dyke is saying because he's, I love him, but he's quite old.
I think he's 92 or 3.
And Angela Lansbury, there's no reason for her, but she's Angela Lansbury, so you're
he's not
just
too
like,
old to throw shade at Piers Morgan, though, online.
Dick Van Dyke's birthday was just a few days ago, like a week ago.
Right.
So he was how old?
So he was born in 1925, so he is 93.
Wow. I have to admit, I was kind of hoping for a Julie Andrews cameo, but I actually spoke to Emily Blunt, and she said that one of the reasons Julie Andrews was considering doing it, but she sort of felt like to show up as the other Mary Poppins or the quote-unquote real Mary Poppins, like, wouldn't be fair to Emily and would sort of distract people.
Oh, that sounds like the right reason.
Yeah. That's true.
But apparently she loves the movie, so.
Yeah, and it made sense for Dick Van Dyke to be there because he does that cameo in the first one, but he can't be playing the same guy. He has to be playing, like, this... The son who's grown up, I don't know. One of the bank guys, I need to see it again.
Well, we know Bert is still alive.
But Jack, he's like traveling the world or something like
that. There's a throwaway line at the start where like, Bert's off, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I thought maybe we'd see him toward the end.
He got tired of waiting around for Mary Poppins.
No, I think having the bank guy, I think is a better thing. Like, same deal, it was less distracting.
So wait, he does a cameo in the first one as a bank guy?
So in the original, Dick Van Dyke had a cameo as Mr. Dawes. Senior. Mr. Dawes Senior runs the bank. And then at the end, Mr. Dawes Junior, I think, is like, Dad died from laughing. It's fine.
And that's not Dick Van Dyke playing Mr. Dawes Junior in the original.
Not in the original.
Okay. He's Dawes Senior. So in this one, he's playing Dawes Junior all grown up.
Got it.
If that's... Yeah. Anyway, he's playing the old guy at the bank. It's a fun cameo.
What, 20 years later?
Oh, it has to be more than that, right? Because...
Well, it's set during the Depression.
Yeah, it's like, it's in the 30s, and the original was set, like, in the early 1900s. Like, 19...
Don't make me do math.
10s, maybe. So, yeah, maybe 20 years have passed. Anyway, the kids are cute. The kids are very sweet. Yeah. They are very different than what the Banks children were like. Mm-hmm. They're kind of... The ones who are kind of being the adults, trying to hold the parents together, which is way different than what the kids were like in the original.
Pixie Davies plays Annabelle Banks, and Nathaniel Salee is John Banks, and then Joel Dawson is Georgie, so the little one.
Yeah,
and that they're little one, very cute. Yeah, very good. It's always difficult to get the right kid actors for your roles, and they really did with this one. So that's just awesome.
So I want to talk about the biggest thing that I noticed. And this isn't a bad thing, it's just something I noticed, that there is, every song in this film has an equivalent in the original, and they all fall in kind of the same place in the story. So the first song is Lovely London Sky, sung by Lin-Manuel Miranda. So that equivalent of that is?
I don't know.
Da, 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 da. Chim Chimney. Because that's what Bert sings at the very beginning, okay? And it's that very, like, you know, something interesting's about to happen. I don't know, a little twinkle in his eye, right? Then, Lovely London Sky is Chim Chim Tree. Then there's a song, I think it's called, like, a conversation where Michael is like singing while he's like looking at the stuff from his dead wife. And that's
really sad.
It's very sad. And I would say that's like kind of a mashup between Perfect Nanny and The Life I Lead, at least where it falls in the story. The Life I Lead is Mr. Banks's at 6 a.m. I come home from work or whatever it goes. Okay. Then There's Mary Poppins' first song, which is called...
I love this song. Love this whole number.
And it's called Can You Imagine That? And it's totally Spoonful of Sugar. Instead of cleaning up the bedroom, it's Let's Take a Bath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But obviously, since it's 2018, they go all out with it. Like, they go in the bathtub, they're swimming under the
ocean.
There's a
dolphin.
There's they're swimming in an unrealistic way, kind of like how they do in, like, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, which is kind of a neat thing. Mm. So yeah, so that, Can You Imagine That? Is like Spoonful of Sugar.
Might be my favorite number.
It's pretty great, and Emily Blunt sounds great on it. And it's gonna be a song that I teach kids. I could tell as soon as it ended, I was like, I'm gonna be teaching this song to kids for years. Then there's the whole sequence in the bowl, which is basically the whole Jolly Holiday sequence. You know, it's the first big magical adventure outing that they do with Mary Poppins. So there's Jolly Holiday and Supercalifragilistic, and in this, it's the Royal Dalton Music Hall.
Yes.
And a cover is not the book of
a... What a clever lyric. I can't believe that lyric's never been used before. The cover is not the book.
A cover is not the book. It's put in a really good way.
Yeah.
Then, they have this song called The Place Where Lost Things Go, and that's definitely the Feed the Birds.
But I do not like Feed the Birds, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was Uncle Walt's favorite song.
I was gonna say, yeah, he did love that
Uncle
song.
Walt's favorite song was Feed the Birds. But it's the same kind of thing. It's the
that's
ballad. It's the ballad with the lush theme that kind of, like, puts everything in perspective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then they have, like, around, what, like, the middle of the second act in both films, they're like, let's go see a wacky relative for some reason. So they do, and in the original, it's I Love to Laugh, and it's Edwin and them floating on the ceiling, and in this it's Turning Turtle.
Is that what it's called?
Turning Turtle. She's like, I'm turning turtle every whatever it is. And the room is flipping upside down, which is kind of the
That's
similar.
That's Meryl Streep's one scene.
Turning Turtle,
yeah.
Which...
She probably win an Oscar for it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well,
yeah, she's basically saying,
she
like, every month she can't go outside.
Yeah, and her world gets turned upside down.
What does that sound like? Her period. It sounds like her period. I'm gonna call it Turning Turtle from now on.
Turning Turtle.
It's about time.
You wanna go swimming? I'm Turning Turtle right now. Out of it. Okay, so then Trip a Little Life Fantastic is
second favorite song.
Yeah, that's I almost called him Bert. It's Lin-Manuel, what's his name?
It's Jack.
Right? Yeah. It's his big song. And it's basically Step in Time. It, you know, in Step in Time in the original, it's all the chimney sweeps dancing on the rooftops of London. And in this, it's the lamplighters or the Learys all dancing around the streets of London. But the thing is, Step in Time is basically Step in Time. There's no bridge. There's no, like Trip a Little Life Fantastic is intense and
it's
extensive.
A really good song.
And it has a lot of lyrics and a lot of wordplay. Like, they teach the kids how to speak Leary.
That's the one I think they're pushing for Oscar nominations.
Oh, it's pretty great. Yeah. And it's a fantastic sequence, like with bikes and lamps, and it's crazy. And then at the end, they have a song called Nowhere to Go But Up with
Another
all these balloons.
Yeah.
And that's basically Let's Go Fly a Kite. So instead of kites, they're flying balloons. And they're, And there's fewer songs in this. In Mary Poppins Returns in the original, because there's no Sister Suffragette equivalent, even though Jane is kind of
she's
like a... What is she? She's like a protester.
She's a revolutionary.
Yeah. She
wears pants.
She would be in Cradle Will Rock, you know, that was around the time when that's... Seriously, that was around the time when this was happening. But there's no, like, she has no song where she's like, cast off the shackles.
Yeah.
And there's really no Stay Awake, which is almost like a song that barely exists in Mary Poppins anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really like that song either.
So it's kind of a neat thing to notice if you are very aware of the original. These songs kind of fall in the same place in the story.
Yeah.
I think the Meryl Streep one is the most noticeable and the Royal Dalton Music Hall one.
Yeah.
But I don't think it takes away from it at all. It helps with like a roadmap because the story itself is actually really different. It's you know, there's a deadline and there's, you know, stakes about losing the house.
The kids are much more active.
Well, yeah, and the mom is dead and Michael's mourning the mom and, you know, there's... is very different than the original, which is just kind of getting their dad to notice them.
Yeah, but Disney likes dead moms.
They sure do. Yeah. But it works in this one. It's not just like a reason for
Disney
there to be nothing.
Moms.
There has to be a dead parent because... Yeah. Why would they need a nanny then? You know?
Right. And also, she was the one who took care of the books and things.
Exactly. And it makes it so that he lost a lot of money, you know, because of that. And they're going to lose the house. So I bought it. It wasn't just like Ariel's mom being dead for some reason.
But one of the things that's kind of interesting.
Ariel's mom? She's dead. Belle's mom dead. There's no reason. I mean, I don't know. We all just assume.
Anyway. Aladdin doesn't have a mom.
He doesn't have. Yeah, and then his dad.
But in the original Mary Poppins, they did have a mom.
Yes,
they did.
So that was.
She was just busy with her suffragette thing.
For sure. I think one of the things that set the plot in motion is they need to find their shares in order to save the house. And I thought it was a really clever thing. I'm pretty sure that this was David McGee who wrote the screenplay. This might have been one of his machinations. It turned out to be on the kite. Literally.
Oh my god! You're gonna spoil it.
Spoilers!
But isn't that
even
what this
though
is?
when she handed him the box or something, I was like, oh, he's gonna put it on the cake. Or when she handed him the picture, I kind of saw that coming.
That's a reference, an obvious reference to the original film, and like Let's Go Fly a Kite was one of the big songs, so it was kind of cool.
And it was the kite from the original.
It played a part in the story, like a very strong part in the plot, which I thought was cool. It was a nice little send up.
Yeah.
I assume if you're watching this, you've already seen it.
Yeah, I hope you. Spoilers. Yeah, go see it if you haven't seen it yet.
It won't ruin the film for you.
What else can we talk about? It's funny. I can already kind of see the haters, and I won't say that it's not like without flaws. Sure. I guess, but you know, they worked their asses off to really give a good product, and I think it's one of the best movie musicals we've had in a really long time. Like, genuinely good book. Not just like, oh, it's just a fun, silly, like, piece of fluff, like, you know, whatever,
like
Mamma Mia or something.
Greatest Showman a little here.
Am I? I think it's better. I think it's way better than The Greatest Showman.
Oh, yeah.
By far. Oh, by far it's better than The Greatest Showman. Whoa. Sorry, I think it is. Like, Greatest Showman is fun, but like this is an actual.
It is really, really fun, but this is
an actual
quality,
good film.
Yeah,
this will stand the test of time, and they made it timeless. Which there's no modern like wackiness. Mm. There's no
references
like,
to the Macarena or something.
or like you know, it's really timeless. They still live next door to Admiral Boom, which is pretty great. They're still on Cherry Tree Lane, which is great. Like
he fires the cannon every hour on the hour. Is that for real? Like.
Yeah, do you remember the original?
But that's just not the greatest neighbor.
No, but that's a joke. And the climax in this film is crazy. Yeah. Like, it's a totally different climax than the original film. Like,
it becomes an action movie.
The original film, it's quiet and Mr. Banks. Yeah. It's Mr. Banks going to the bank and kind of stand. This is like, we're going to climb, spoiler, we're going to climb Big Ben and we're going to change the time and then we're going to, like.
It was so dangerous.
Oh, yeah. It was so dangerous. And, you know, Jack and his Learys, they have so much agency and they're all part of it. Like, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And they keep the bittersweet thing. In fact, I think they lay it on even thicker in this one. That whole idea at the end that once everyone kind of is in a better place, Mary Poppins just kind of starts to be standing in the back and everyone's kind of talking to each other and she hangs back and, you know, it's and blunt during those scenes. You're just like, oh.
All I could think of was the David Pumpkin special. I don't know if you
know that one. There's this no! There's will this we ever big... see you again?
No.
No! And what if her eye just started drifting
like David the way Pumpkin. David Pumpkin says. Yeah, no, it's so great. It's this big, long speech and like, and will we ever see you again?
No! No!
One of my favorite things during the screening that we saw was Lin-Manuel was sitting right over to the left of us.
Oh, he loves this movie.
And I didn't look over at him the whole time.
No, I couldn't.
And then I finally did toward the end, and he was singing along, or he was at least lipping along, lip-syncing along. And we talked to him afterwards, and I had asked him if he had seen it before, and he said that he only had seen it one time before, and he was thinking maybe he wouldn't see it this time, but he wanted to watch it with his niece.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, it's Mary Poppins, I love this movie.
Yeah, he's like it's
I'm going to watch it with my, and of course he ducked out a little early right when the credits started to roll so he could do the talk back. But, I mean, how great is that obviously he's an icon already, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he's a part of this amazing film, but he's also a fan.
Yeah.
He cares that much.
He's just so happy to be a part of it.
Yeah. And it shows, for sure, in the performance.
Yeah, so it's, obviously it's great for kids, it's great for families. I think you can see it at any age and you'll enjoy it, especially if you loved the original.
From 1 to 92. If you're 93, screw you.
Dick Van Dyke. Oh no.
No, not Dick Van Dyke. Won't
he,
this movie.
He just turned 93.
Not penis, now he's too old. Or whatever it was.
we aged out of loving Mary Poppins.
Damn it.
It was bound to happen.
No, he's still like tap dancing to you guys. It's adorable. He's so amazing.
Yeah, he is a miracle. Again, like I like the first movie, but I'm not obsessed with it. And you know, I've worked for Disney a lot, and it's been on a lot, and I've caught pieces of it here and there. But I might have only ever watched it one time all the way through.
Yeah.
But I've seen lots of bits and pieces of it. But I never thought of, like, you were just asking, what's this song title? And I'm like, I have no idea. You know, the only one I can think of is Spoonful of Sugar.
For most people, it's like, The Wizard of Oz. It's one of those movies that you grew up with as a child. So not only do people know it really well, they have an intense connection to it. And I gotta say, it's one of those films where, like, you don't see it for a while and you're like, oh, Mary Poppins, okay, yeah, I liked it when I was a kid. And then you watch it and then you're like, wow, this still holds up. There's still a lot of really good stuff in this movie. And that's, again, timeless. And that's why I think this film is going to stand the test of time as well. I hope they never adapt it for the stage.
But the reason why I bring that up is because going into this, although I do like the Mary Poppins original film, I'm not obsessed with it. It's not a huge part of my life. You know, it wasn't like live or die going in there to see this film. So I didn't have high expectations necessarily. But I just loved the film. From the first second, I was like a kid watching a film, just from the beginning.
There's like a credits, to like the an end, overture. It was amazing. You know, there's like an overture.
A very classic feel.
Yeah, and like you said, when she comes down and the music swells, it happened in the trailer. Like, all of us just went, oh, you know, because it gets you right in the sweet spot, you know, the heart. Yeah. And I think you were saying this, like, a lot of people are saying that this film feels like a balm.
Yes,
right now.
a salve for the soul.
Yes, and it feels like just a good, earnest, happy, but not cheesy. Mm-hmm. A musical.
Yeah. I do think the most subversive thing you can kind of do in movies today is to do something that is earnest and sweet and charming.
Yeah, it's harder.
Yeah,
it's harder.
It is. It's so hard today.
To not roll your eye and
because that's the easy way out. That's the easy joke.
It would have been easier for them to just go, okay, let's just do Jolly Holiday again. Yeah. Or let's just do, you know, another verse of, you know, let's do a song that's basically supercalifragilistic and we'll come up with another nonsense
word or something.
Or let's
do Mary Poppins in the modern age and the kids are like over it. And
make an opinion on that idea.
Right. No, exactly. That would be the easy way out. But
there's already that, and it's the Simpsons episode.
Sherry Bobbins.
Yes. Yeah.
The Simpsons did it.
Jukebox.
but that goes back to the production. Also, another thing that Lin-Manuel Miranda said and Emily Blunt said during a talkback is they had, 8 weeks rehearsal before, which is so rare on any film production. But, like, because they had to learn that dance, that song that they did.
And Rob Marshall.
Triple Little Light, fantastic. And Cover's Not the Book. Those two sequences are incredibly choreographed.
There's no way that you could do that without massive amounts of choreography. And that's a testament to the producers for making that happen. And it also created a camaraderie between Emily Blunt and Lin-Manuel Miranda that wouldn't have been there otherwise.
And she already has shorthand with Rob Marshall because of Into the Woods, so they already have a connection.
And she was obsessed with Hamilton, she told us.
Yeah, because who wasn't?
She didn't know what a Hamel drop was. So we got to watch Lin-Manuel Miranda telling Emily Blunt, and she's just sitting there like, oh. And then he mentioned that Sarah Bareilles dropped a song, and then we're watching Emily Blunt like fangirl out over Sarah Bareilles. Like, it was pretty great.
It was a lot of cool things happening that night for sure.
Yeah, and they were incredibly gracious, sweet people. And they did not have to be.
I don't always do this, but I asked for a picture with us with Lin-Manuel, and he knew that if he opened that door, so many people would flock him. So he took my phone and on the sly took a selfie of the three of us. So, it was pretty rad.
Pretty rad.
So thanks again for that, pal.
Yeah. So we loved it. We can't say enough good things about it. I really recommend you see it. Watch the original if you haven't seen it in a while. But you know what? You don't have to. If you kind of just have a vague memory from childhood, get it. You'll still remember the important stuff. You know, you'll remember the Banks children, and you'll see Admiral Boom and go, oh yeah, that guy. I remember that guy.
I hated that guy.
Yeah. Oh, he's always doing that thing. So, I think you'll
really
enjoy
it. Worse than a barking dog is the neighbor that fires a cannon every hour.
Yeah, we have a barking dog cannon
Wait, you go with Canon that shoots barking dogs?
Ah, it sounds like it.
It's a whole other barking dog's mouth
and it shoots bees and bees.
Not the bees.
So, anyway,
I was just going to say, Julie Andrews won the Academy Award for playing Mary Poppins.
She sure did.
And I would not be surprised if Emily Blunt also wins the Academy Award.
That would be some nice symmetry there.
Well, you know, the story with Julie Andrews winning that is that she was... It was the same year as My Fair Lady.
Was it?
And My Fair Lady, they cast a lot of the original actors like Rex Harrison, but they did not cast Julie Andrews because she wasn't a name yet. So they went with, Audrey Hepburn. And so then Disney was like, oh, okay, well, do you want to do this Mary Poppins film? And she was like, okay. And so it was her film debut. And so then that year...
Mary Poppins was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought Sound of Music came first.
Mm-mm. So Julie Andrews' like biggest credit at the time besides Broadway was she was in Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella, which was on TV. If you can read the biography, Something Wonderful about Rodgers and Hammerstein, do it, because they talk about how that Cinderella was like one of the most watched things ever. It was like 12 Super Bowls all at once. Like it was because it was so early in the history of TV. Rodgers and Hammerstein were so incredibly popular. Like I don't even think any modern musical theater composer like comes close. Maybe Andrew Lloyd Webber, maybe, but they were so, anyway.
So
she had that to her name. And so then they ask her to do Mary Poppins. So then she's up against Audrey Hepburn at the Academy Awards for My Fair Lady for the role that she originated on Broadway. And then she beat Audrey Hepburn. Yeah. And she won for Mary Poppins. So you always cast Julie Andrews. Anyway, I don't think Emily Blunt will be in a similar situation, but she has to be nominated, right?
I think she can win.
Yeah.
I think she can win too.
Has she been nominated before?
Yeah.
No, never for an Oscar. No.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I know. Isn't it crazy? And she just last week got two SAG Award nominations
for
Mary Poppins and Quiet Place.
Wow.
So she is beloved.
Big year. Yeah, she's amazing.
Bravo.
Her career trajectory is going like this.
Ugh. I mean, her career was already like
going pretty great, but
like this kind of, I don't know, this is so dorky, but I told her, I was like, I don't know you obviously, but I'm so proud of you. And I am, I'm so proud of her because she's so talented
and she's so good in Into the Woods.
And she's fun and funny. And she's just, she played my favorite part in Into the Woods. You know, how could I not be like,
And what was it, Live, Die, Repeat? They changed the name of that film.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow is a great movie.
It's like she's an action star in that movie. Yep. And then she can just turn around and do this.
Yeah. She can do it
amazing.
Emily Blunt.
Don't mess with her.
And Lin-Manuel, I mean, he's going to be... I mean, he's already the biggest thing in the world right now, but I feel like he's going to be in a lot more stuff now.
And I'm okay with that.
I am...
The cream.
Give it more. Give me more Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think we've.
Yes.
Do we sign off with our Cockney accent?
Yeah. Well, thank you all for watching our review of Mary Poppins.
Governor.
Mary Poppins,
your uncle.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
Have a great holiday, everybody.
Fantastic with me.
Yeah. If you've already seen Mary Poppins, I hope you have since you're watching this.
I hope you. Yeah.
Go out and watch it again. I'm going to.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Definitely.
Cheers.
All right. Bye.
Bye, you guys.
Happy Christmas.